It was a renaissance weekend in the game of golf. In Japan, an emotional Keegan Bradley shakes a four-year drought with a win in the Zozo Championship. Why was this victory so meaningful to the major winner? Although he didn't win in Japan, Ricky Fowler is trending. He picks up his second top 10 of the young season. What has turned things around for Ricky, and what should we expect for the rest of the season? Plus, Boom Boom is back. 63-year-old Freddie Couples nearly shoots in the 50s on Sunday to win on the PGA Tour Champions for the first time since 2017. We look back on popular wins and look ahead to a big week on the PGA Tour next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hi there, thanks for teaming up with us here on this Monday edition of Golf Today. I am Todd Lewis, and I am genuinely proud to be sitting beside our friend Eamon Lynch, great contributor to the Golf Channel and also a great writer for Golf Week. And as I mentioned, a lot of big names, popular names, major champions winning over the weekend. We have Lexi Thompson, Brooks Koepka, Keegan Bradley, and Fred Couples winning as well. It was cool watching Boom Boom. 63 years of age, shooting a 60, 3 years better than his age. I'm closer to shooting my weight than my age when I play golf. But watching him rhythmically go around that golf course and shoot that great number at Wynn was remarkable.
And I'm closer to shooting my IQ when I go out there for nine holes these days. But, yeah, there were a lot of damaged golfers won this weekend, both physically and mentally. And, you know, a lot of people we've analyzed during the struggles that they've had, but it really is just proof that nothing's permanent in this game. Right. The good times never last, but nor do the bad times.
Yeah, perseverance means a lot on the world's greatest stage. We also have another great friend of ours, a great contributor, Paige McKenzie. She is joining us remotely. And Paige, hi, happy Monday to you. What are you taking away from the weekend?
It was an incredible weekend. It's hard to believe it was mid-October because you had some of the headliner names take trophies, come down the stretch. It was a tight race on the PGA Tour. The fact that Fred Couples got in the zone was exceptional. And then Lexi Thompson breaking through after a very long time. I mean, it was a heck of a Saturday night into Sunday kind of day on the golf scene.
Keegan Bradley, I follow this guy a lot. He is constantly grinding, working, trying to get back to where he was when he started his career. And he is a winner once again. Keegan Bradley, one-shot victory over Ricky Fowler and Andrew Putnam. And Fowler doesn't win, but he picks up his second top 10 this season. He finished tied for second with Andrew Putnam, as I mentioned. Putnam, best finish since the 2021 Barracuda Championship. So it's Bradley, though, who earns his first victory since that 2018 BMW Championship, a span of 1,498 days. And check this out, a very special moment on the phone with his wife, Jillian.
Oh, my God, it's so good to talk to you. Keep it together.
Love you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mooch. I miss you guys. Okay. Let me call you in a little bit, okay? Okay, love you. Love you. Bye.
And as you can tell there, a great player, a better person, and he is beloved and respected by his peers on the PGA Tour. Check out this from Justin Thomas, taking notice, saying, "This is so awesome. I firsthand have seen how hard Keegan Bradley works his tail off, and the emotion is so raw. All of us on tour are lucky to have such great support systems to let us chase our dreams. Congrats, dude."
Well, Bradley's victory was the biggest drought buster of the year. 4 years, 1 month, 7 days, almost 1,500 days since he won the BMW Championship 2018, edging out Xander Schauffele and Ches Reavy for drought buster of the year. And afterwards, he spoke about what he'd learned back in 2019 playing in the final group at the Zozo with Tiger Woods.
It's spectacular. I learned a lot that day playing 36 holes with him the last two rounds when he won. You know, anytime you play with Tiger, it's really great. But to watch him win up close was spectacular. And I learned a lot, and I was thinking about it the whole day today, just kind of remembering Tiger and how he walked a little slower than I noticed in the past, and I tried to do that. And to have that same exact pin on 18 and be able to win, and man, what a special day.
Keegan, how far was the putt on 17? What's the distance you estimate? And did you feel like you had a good shot at it? And also, you look like you're ready to cry. The emotion inside must be tremendous. Talk about that.
I've been crying since I finished. I can't remember the last time I cried. I talked to my wife on the phone a second ago, FaceTime. I can't keep it together. I don't know what's wrong with me. It means a lot. There's a lot of hard work that goes into this, and it's even if you play perfectly, it doesn't mean you're going to win. But for me, you know, I feel like I should be contending for tournaments. I want to be contending to play on Ryder Cup, President's Cup teams, majors. And, you know, this is going to go a long way. I haven't really won, of my five, I haven't really won that many leading the entire day like I did today. And I really learned a lot. And I think I can take a lot of that going forward the rest of the year.
All right, Paige, I want to bring you back in. You heard him talk about he had the lead a majority of the day. By the way, all five of his victories have been come from behind victories on the PGA Tour. But for the majority of the day, he had the lead. He is a fidgety player, to say the least, when he's out there playing. How did he handle the nerves, in your opinion, down the stretch?
You know, Todd and Eamon, when you look at the game of golf, you know you're going to face adversity. And I think the hardest part of adversity, it's not a bad lie. It's not if your opponent drains a birdie putt on you. It truly is dealing with internal demons. I think every professional golfer will say that that is the most challenging part, is really overcoming getting in your way. And there were moments in the back nine where you started to see that. And whether it was the mistake on 15 where he had to make a nice par save to stay in it, or to me, everyone's going to remember the shank on 16, but to me, it was the tee shot on 16 that was really the trouble. The worst kind of miss is a weak right miss. And that's exactly what happened on the tee. And to end up in the bunker, That to me was just as damning for him, because he had already shown cracks. And then to deal with this, to hear the announce team talk about after the shot what he must be going through, they were ready to give the trophy to somebody else. They were already talking about how he has nearly lost the tournament. So to me, that's why this shot was the most important shot of the day. How are you going to respond? And to me, once I saw that kind of aggressive swing, and yeah, he's staring at it, but ultimately this was a striped drive in the middle of the fairway. That, obviously I had known that he won, because I watched this in the morning after the tournament ended overnight. I'm like, how is he going to respond to what happened on 16? And to see that drive on 17, to me, that was the overcoming. That was the adversity that he had to overcome, was what had happened on the previous couple of shots. Everyone's going to go to the shank, but to me, that tee shot was also, it's that right bail. It's that weak right shot where you know it's you. It's not any environmental thing. And then he was able to stand up on that tee and hit a great drive. To me, that was impressive, and I think it speaks to how ready he was to get back into the winner's circle, because you have to mentally be ready in those moments.
Yeah, not only a great drive, but obviously a great approach and a great putt for that birdie and that two-shot swing on the 17th hole as well. Eamon, what did Keegan Bradley show you this weekend?
Just picking up on what Paige said, you could apply the same logic in a way to Ricky Fowler. Here are two guys who were presented with a lot of opportunities to show that they didn't quite have the belief in what they've been working on for the last few years. And in Bradley's case, particularly with that birdie on 17, he showed finally a sense of belief that he belongs where he found himself at the end of the day, because it's very easy to forget how good he was at the start of his career. He won the Byron Nelson in his rookie year, won a major in his rookie year, won the WGC the following year, and then had a six-year drought and now a four-year drought. And a lot of that has owed, excuse me, to his putting. And we can actually have a look here at exactly what his putting progression has been over the last few years. He fell outside the top 150 in strokes gained putting quite a few years ago and has struggled mightily to get back to that level. And this season we're working on a pretty small data sample, and this was his best week, obviously, and the statistics from the Zozo were pretty rudimentary, so it's not really a fair reflection, perhaps, of where he is. It might even be better than fifth. But even that progress you see between 2021 and 2022, where he broke into the top 100 again, broke into the top 90, that's an enormous improvement over being in the 170s the year before. He finally seems like a guy who's found a belief that had been taken away from him for quite a number of years.
Yeah, belief is the most precious commodity a player on the PGA Tour on the world stage can have. And I want to echo what you're talking about. When you come out and you win in your rookie year, especially a major championship, then that's your bar. I mean, we saw that with Jordan Spieth. You know, he came out in 2015 and he nearly won every major. And he felt like, hey, this is where I'm supposed to be all the time. But golf is golf and it's going to have ebb and flow and peaks and valleys. And it's taken him a while to find that belief. Why was he so emotional? Because he did recapture that belief. And he's no longer in the spring of his career. Not saying that he's old. He's 36. He's still got a lot of great golf in front of him. But, you know, he's got a lot of golf behind him too. So to get that belief back and to win in the way he did by having the lead throughout the majority of that round, that I think that could be a threshold moment for him. And you know, this is not just a flash in the pan. He had a top 10 in his last start at the Sanderson Farms this season. So we'll see where Keegan Bradley goes after this victory in Japan. And then there is Ricky Fowler. You talk about belief. He's trying to recapture some of that belief after what has been, you know, a below average at least season, not only its last season, but the previous one as well. He does finish tied for second, his second top 10 on the PGA Tour in his last three starts, so he is trending. Here's what Fowler had to say after starting the final round with the lead.
Bittersweet. Obviously, you know, wanted to get the job done, and I felt very good going into today, and felt, you know, probably as good as you can feel out there. And you know, final round, haven't been there a whole lot in the last couple of years. Really just didn't give myself many opportunities until the end, and hit some darn good putts that it was like there was a cover over the hole. So gave it all, left it all out there. Big congrats to Keegan. He made the putts, I didn't, so he earned it. But definitely excited about you know, having a couple good finishes to start this season, and a lot of good stuff coming. It's just a, you know, finally in a position where we're, you know, building momentum and you know, building more confidence. So, you know, I feel like in the last few years there'd be times where kind of take a step forward, and just was never really able to build more momentum than, you know, for 1 week at a time. So, you know, in a great spot, and you know, finally in a position where things are starting to kind of snowball and you know, head the right direction altogether.
Talk about how much fun it is to be in contention and what that's like coming on a Sunday, coming up and knowing that you have a chance.
I mean, it's why we play, you know, to really put yourself in a position where you have a chance on the back nine. That's what it all comes down to. So, you know, obviously, you know, left some out there, and I wish it was a different outcome, but good to be back in the position and ready to do that a lot more often.
And he is still immensely popular globally. After signing his card, meeting with the media, he went out to sign autographs for all the great fans in Japan. That is Ricky Fowler just being Ricky Fowler, such a great ambassador to the game of golf and to the PGA Tour. And you take a look at his results this season, and like I mentioned, his second top 10 and his three starts this season. Missed the cut at the Shriners in Las Vegas, but that offered him some time to spend some time with Butch Harmon, who he is now working with. Butch is based in Las Vegas. You remember, he split with John Tillery after 3 years, and he's back working with Butch Harmon once again. All right, Paige, you heard Ricky say after his runner-up finish in Japan that he is excited about this season ahead of him now after this start. Are you excited about what we can see from Ricky Fowler this season?
I'm thrilled. And I don't know how you wouldn't be. I mean, he's played 10 rounds so far this season. He's nine of those 10 rounds under par. The only other round was even par. He's played incredibly consistent in those three events, even though he missed the cut in Shriners. He shot 70-70. It's not like he was playing awful golf. So, yeah, I'm thrilled for him. And I think going back to Ricky Fowler, it's in looking at it big picture, there's the chicken and the egg argument. What comes first, results or confidence? And I think most players would say that you have to have some level of mental confidence in what you're doing before the results come. So the fact that now we're starting to see results, he talked about the momentum that you can build. To me, that's what it is. It's that cycle of building on the confidence with the results and going forward. When you look at this week and this event, I think we have to remember how pivotal that 17th hole was for the Andrew Putnam Keegan Bradley shootout. But Ricky Fowler was right there. Had he had one of those putts drop and going back to the 16th hole, this putt, had he made this putt, he would have stood on the 17th tee tied with Keegan Bradley and Andrew Putnam, and who knows what would have happened if there was a little bit more pressure on Keegan coming down the stretch, because Andrew, again, put himself in poor position both off the tee and then into that green. It is so fine, the line between winning and not, that you can literally point to a moment which could have changed the trajectory of the rest of the tournament. And there was so much about Sunday that just didn't feel like he had the right stuff. But I'm excited because I feel like it's all coming, and it's all coming together. Certainly with the addition of Butch Harmon back into the mix, because we've seen some of the turnarounds that he's had on his players in the past.
Oh, yeah. Quite an influential force in the game is Butch Harmon. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ricky Fowler lift a championship trophy on tour this year.
Nor would I. I mean, it was interesting to hear Ricky talk about the difficulty in building momentum week to week, because it's striking how far he'd been with no momentum at all. If you had to go back to the CJ Cup in Vegas a year ago, to Ricky Fowler's last top 10 before the Fortinet Championship opening this season. Now he's had 2 out of 3. And that's showing up in his statistical profile as well. If you look at some of the key numbers in terms of Ricky's performance, you can see just how much he's advanced in strokes gained approach, tee to green, the putting is noticeable, and then the strokes gained total. And that number you see on the right, what he's doing this season, it's not just that it's a small data sample that he's only played 3 events. It's also an inaccurate data sample. He's better than that, because the statistics that were gathered at the Zozo this weekend in Japan were fairly rudimentary. It wasn't the deep shots gained, shot length statistics that we're accustomed to seeing. So Ricky Fowler's performance this season is noticeably better. So while you can track the numbers and the numerical performance, there's no strokes gained metric for confidence. And that's what he's showing that we haven't seen in such a long time.
And it's not by coincidence that this confidence, in my opinion, is back after he reacquainted himself with Butch Harmon as his coach. No disrespect to John Tillery, who is a fantastic coach and has a world-class stable of players, but that just wasn't clicking. So he goes back to Butch Harmon, and Butch Harmon knows all the technicalities of the swing. But more than anything, he knows the psyche of his students. And I'm sure he reminded Ricky Fowler, you're one of the greatest players of all time, and that, on the PGA Tour, and that has not gone away. You still have that ability, and gave him that juice. I mean, sure, I'm sure he's working with this swing, probably trying to make it a little more vertical, not as flat, laid off, hitting that weak right shot that Paige was talking about. But I think he has given him the voice that he needs in his ear, and that is, you are a great player, and you're not far from being that player that you once was, or even better. So we'll see if that continues for Ricky Fowler. Here's a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, and the reason this is so important is since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So if a player finishes in the Top 10, odds are they're going to make it to the Tour Championship. And with his win, Keegan Bradley takes over the number one spot on that list. We're just getting started here on this Monday. Another big name broke a drought over the weekend. That is Lexi Thompson. She's back in the winner's circle for the first time in 3 years. But what could this win mean for the future of the women's game? Beth Ann Nichols joins us to discuss. Women's game, the Aramco Team Series New York event happening here in the city, or just outside the city. Lexi Thompson, here she is, her approach on the 17th. Knocks that, makes birdie there, and taps in to get the win. Lexi Thompson gave her a challenge, but this is a significant win for Lexi Thompson, who has come close, obviously, many times on the LPGA Tour, but she does get a victory. She's holding a trophy for the first time in quite a while. She wins by 3 shots over Brooke Henderson, Madeline Saxon. There you see Nellie Korda in the mix as well, but it is Thompson getting back into the victory circle. Here's what she had to say after the win.
Just sum up how you're feeling. Pretty amazing. Just a blessing to be here. Had a great week. The team aspect of the Aramco Team Series is always so much fun, but to be able to win the individuals, definitely a blessing, and worked my butt off to get here, and had a great week.
Okay, it's your first win in 3 years. How great is it to be back in the winner's circle?
it feels amazing, and to be able to share it with my brother on the bag, he really did help me out a lot out there, just keeping me calm and relaxed, and we had a good time through it all.
Okay. Well, in that time, in the 3 years, you came close a couple of occasions. Did you ever think or doubt yourself that you'd ever quite cross the line again?
I never doubted myself. I mean, I know if I put on the hard work, it would eventually pay off. And just getting myself in contention and in those moments, in those final rounds, I knew one time it would pay off. So, you know, it's a matter of learning from those experiences and building on them.
Okay. You mentioned you had your brother on the bag there. Great to have family here and tick off a win on home soil too.
Definitely. Definitely is. I'm so grateful that my brother Nick has been able to come out and help me and be on my bag. And we've had a lot of fun out there, and he's just helped me out through it all.
Is he going to stay on the bag then?
Yes, definitely.
And lastly, how are you looking to celebrate this win?
Well, I guess a little party here, but honestly, just go back home and surround myself with my loved ones and my family and just celebrate it there. But definitely looking forward to tonight and celebrating with everybody here.
All right, Paige, you heard Lexi talk about the fact she never really doubted herself going through this drought of 3 years. So was this a significantly important victory for her or not?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's hard when she's in contention that many times to say that she would have doubted herself, but there had been so many times that she didn't get the job done on a Sunday. There were so many times where it felt like there was a lead that was big enough where it wasn't going to go away, and that she was too talented not to win. There's just been several instances over the last 3 years that it just hasn't happened for her. So it's hard to believe that she wouldn't have doubted some form of that. But to me, this win was absolutely huge in getting over that hurdle, getting back into the winner's circle, proving to herself that, yes, you are that talented to get it done. For Lexi Thompson, I just felt like there needed to be a moment like this in order for her to continue to win on the LPGA Tour and to win major championships again. You can think back to the US Open, to KPMG, two of the last majors that have happened on the LPGA Tour where she squandered pretty large leads. And when I talked about with Keegan Bradley that there was adversity that you had to overcome, and oftentimes the hardest one is within yourself, to me that was what's going on with Lexi Thompson. The gift is there. The talent is there. The work has been put in. It was just a matter of letting it happen. I don't feel like she even needs to try that hard. She's one of the best ball strikers the LPGA has seen in the last 15 years, that it was just a matter of time. And whatever combination of whether it was Nick or whether the fact that it was an LET event and not an LPGA event that she finally got it done, to me, this was monumental in what can be built on the LPGA Tour moving forward because of the finally getting the win over the last couple of years.
And that's the component of Lexi Thompson winning, something that, you know, although she said she never doubted, but I'm sure she needed that validation that all this work is happening. But then there is also a broader picture, Eamon, in the fact that the Aramco Team Series, the Saudis, just like they are involved with LIV Golf, are involved in this as well. What's your take on not only her win, but her involvement in this series?
Now, there's a certain element of controversy to that, and you can make a nuanced argument that there's a difference, Todd, between sponsorship of a tournament and ownership of a tour, but that argument still only takes you so far. It's soft sports washing, by another name, what the Aramco series are doing, and it's easy prey because the Ladies European Tour runs on fumes. So it's an easy thing to throw money at and get attention for, but they did get attention from a lot of top LPGA Tour players this week. The LPGA Tour was off. A lot of players showed up, and it's not uncommon to see appearance fees paid to top players on the Ladies European Tour. Whether any were paid this week has not been disclosed. What I was struck by was Lexi's comments afterwards, where she said, you know, of the sponsors, what they're doing is amazing. They're giving girls opportunities. They're growing the game. We're very grateful, which seems to me a little bit distasteful to lay it on when you're talking about a regime with a record of Saudi Arabia and its state-owned oil company sponsoring the event. But all it does is prove, I think, if there is ever some kind of alignment between Golf Saudi or LIV Golf and the LPGA Tour, if that threat arises, anyone who expects to see more evidence of a moral compass on the LPGA Tour is probably going to be disappointed.
That's an interesting take there. And to broaden the discussion on that, we're going to welcome in Bethann Nichols, who covers the game probably better than anyone out there. Bethann, good to see you first off. And there were several big names in the field at last week's Aramco Team Series event. As Eamon was talking about, is this now a concern for the LPGA Tour, this competition?
I think you could definitely look at this from a number of angles. It's obviously very complex. I think it's important to note, first of all, that a lot of these stars did not play in the previous week's event on the LPGA in California, the MetaHeel, nor are they in the field for this week's event, the BMW in South Korea. So the fact that we won't see a lot of them on the LPGA again until mid-November has to be concerning for the tour. They will be at the Pelican. When obviously, as Eamon mentioned, appearance fees are involved in the Aramco Team Series, so that plays a role in it. But overall, I think, the fact that these players showed up, and this is not the first time that they've played in Aramco events. This has happened, over and over again, that should something come to the table for the LPGA. And Molly Marcoux-Simon, the commissioner, has said that she will sit down with Liv Goff, and Liv Goff certainly is interested in doing something in the women's game, that many of the top stars have no problem taking Saudi money. And so they've made that very apparent. They talk a lot about growing the game, growing the tour. And one can make an argument, when you take the moral part out of it, that Goff Saudi has done a lot for the Ladies European Tour, which was really struggling. And they've put a lot of money into that tour. And I definitely think that there's some merit there in that argument from a financial standpoint for what they've done to help the Ladies European Tour. But in terms of the overall moral question, a lot of the top stars don't really want to engage in that question and don't seem to have a problem with it.
Well, Bethan, one person who doesn't have a problem with engaging in it is Carrie Webb, because last week we saw her retweet the letter from the family of a Saudi activist directed at Molly Marcoux-Simon about what her family has experienced and urging her not to have any links or business dealings with the Saudis and Liv Goff. Does that speak, the fact that Carrie Webb did that, does that speak to a conversation that's actually happening? Do we know if there are any discussions, or is there a rising level of concern among some players that it could happen?
I definitely think that it's on the horizon in terms, I don't know where they stand at this point in terms of what could be coming, but I think all the players expect something to be coming. And I think they think you'd be foolish not to. In terms of, does that mean an elevated Aramco series where they're now involved with the LPGA and fully sanctioned LPGA events with much bigger purses? Does that mean the opportunity of a completely separate tour like we have in the men's game? That, of course, remains to be seen. But this is a player-led organization. So at the end of the day, the stars are going to do, they're going to do the talking here with their feet, basically, in terms of where they go to play. And Molly Marcoux-Simon is going to have to take their lead at the end of the day. And so it'll be interesting to see how she leads and what comes next, because I think there is a lot on the line for the LPGA.
Yeah, I'm sure press conferences are going to be interesting on the LPGA Tour. And by the way, the Tour's next event is going to be in Korea in the BMW Ladies Championship. Jennyeon Koh is expected to return to action after taking time off due to injury. What can we expect from her in that event?
Well, I think we've learned never to underestimate Jennyeon Koh after a long break. She has showed us time and time again, coming back from, in 2020 from the COVID break. Then she did it again last year when she took off. She skipped a major championship in the AIG Women's Open to have a reset, came back, won in Portland, had a fantastic second half of the year. And then, of course, she won, severely injured last year with that wrist. So I'm not sure. We'll find out later this week how the wrist is doing right now and what kind of pain level she's still experiencing. But there's no question that when Jennyeon Koh has a break, has a reset and a chance to not only work on her golf game, but get away from the pressure for a little bit, that she comes back firing on all cylinders. So I actually expect big things from Jennyeon this week.
But she may still be the world number one, Bethan, but she's not really a contender and player of the year at this point. There are three names in there, obviously Minji Lee, Brooke Henderson, Athaia Thitikul. How do you see it playing out? Because it still seems pretty wide open at this stage.
It does. And when you look at Minji Lee, she hasn't been playing great of late, whereas the young rookie, Athaia Thitikul, has been playing absolutely fantastic golf. She She has four top tens in her, hasn't finished outside of the top 10 in her last four starts. That includes a victory. A victory on the LPGA is worth 30 points in this race, and you have to finish in the top 10 to earn a point toward the LPGA Player of the Year standings. And Ataya has a chance to become only the third player to be Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year in the same season, following in the footsteps of the likes of Nancy Lopez, and then Sung Young Park did it a few years ago when she tied with Soyeon Yoo in the Player of the Year race. So that certainly is rare air when you can take both of those awards in the same season. And Sitakun is a former prodigy and she's delivering on all the promise that she's shown for a long time.
Getting back to the next event in Korea, we talked about JYK. Jin Young Ko is going to be playing in that event. Are you surprised that there are of some of the names that aren't playing in Korea?
Well, you know, I have to say, when I was looking down the list of entries, I was surprised not to see Eun-ji Chun, a player who won a major earlier this year, nearly won a second one. She won KPMG, lost in the playoff at the AIG Women's Open. And we haven't seen her on the LPGA since Canada, way back in August. So I sent her coach a note, Won Park, and he said that she's been out with a shoulder injury. She's put down the clubs for four straight weeks and just now got them back out. So she's not quite ready to get back in form in Korea, but we'll see her in the last two events of the year.
One of the awards, Bethan, that players tend to put a lot more store in than perhaps the broader golf fans are the scoring awards in the Vera Trophy in the case of the LPGA Tour. Lydia Ko seems to have a handle on that at the moment. Do you think that's a pretty good reflection of where she is in the game right now?
Absolutely. You know, she obviously hasn't won on the LPGA since the start of the year, way back at the Gamebridge in January. But this is obviously an award that rewards consistency. And because every stroke counts, a lot of players actually, as you say, feel it's sort of like the real Player of the Year award. And Lydia Ko won the Bear Trophy last year for the first time. Minji Lee will have to average just above 68 for the rest of the season to unseat her right now from the top position. But to win this award in back-to-back years, I think really says a lot about what we can see from Lydia in the future. She has 21 LPGA Hall of Fame points. To win the Bear Trophy, that would give her 22. You need 27 to make it into the LPGA Hall of Fame. They got rid of that pesky you must play 10 years rule earlier this year, thank goodness. But Lydia has always told us she doesn't want to play past 30. She's 25 right now, so in every point that she gets in inching toward that Hall of Fame is so important because she's exactly the kind of player you want to see there.
Mm. Well, Bethan, thank you so much. Keep doing what you do so well, and that is cover the game of golf, specifically the women's game, so wonderfully. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Well, over on the PGA Tour Champions, most guys are more likely to break a hip than break their age, but not Freddie Couples. He did it yesterday by 3 full shots. We'll take a look at Boom Boom's sensational Sunday next.
What a round. What a round. 63-year-old Fred Couples. I mean, this is a huge win, not only for the PGA Tour Champions, but for all of golf. And Freddie Couples shooting a 60, going 30-30 to get his first win in quite a while on the PGA Tour Champions.
You know, expectations are a lot with me. And coming in here, you know, I had Griff, Steve Flesh's son, caddying for me. I just wanted to play well for him, and I started with a double on the very first hole. So we didn't hit it off so well. But today was just an unreal day. As we were just talking a second ago, the putt I made on 10 was a huge boost. Because I knew 12 downwind would be something I could get, and then I could get settled in again after making those 5 birdies.
So it's been 5 years since your last victory. Did it all come flooding back to you today?
You know, I have been thinking about the 5-shot lead at Seattle, which is where I grew up, probably once a day. So I haven't really thought about it lately, but today was, you know, I never hit it like that on the range either. Yesterday, I didn't really feel well. And today on the range, I didn't say anything to Griff because I really never hit it like that. Every shot I hit, and I went out on the golf course and did really, really well, and I putted like you used to. It was a lot of fun.
And you heard Freddie talking about having Steve Fleisher's son Griff on the bag. His regular caddy Mark Chaney is with his mom in London, so he reached out to Steve and Griff and said, "Hey, can you caddy for me?" I think that was a great choice, Eamon. I mean, Griff said, "Yeah, I'll take that."
Yeah, it wouldn't be a full-time job with Freddie if he stayed on the bag, because Freddie only averages about 10 starts a year out there.
Well, if you win a couple, I mean, it's okay. Here's the upcoming schedule now. As the regular season is over on the PGA Tour Champions, we now move to the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. They start in Richmond with the Dominion Energy Charity Classic. Fred Couples not in the field for this event. Indicated he probably, likely will not play in the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. Stay with us as we continue here on Golf Today. Plenty to talk about, including the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. Before the field makes its way to Thailand, we're catching up with one of the participants, Stanford's Carl Phillips. The Asia Pacific Amateur Championship returns to Amanus Springs Country Club in Thailand. This is a 72-hole stroke play event, as invitations for the championship are sent to the leading players from the Asia Pacific Golf Confederation member organizations. Now, each country is automatically provided one position, which is to be filled by its highest-ranked player from the World Amateur Golf Ranking. Now, the champion is going to receive quite the opportunity, an invitation to compete in the 2023 Masters Tournament, an exemption into the 151st Open Championship, and an exemption into the 128th Amateur Championship. Sanford Jr. Carl Phillips will be playing in his second Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, where he will be representing Australia. He is currently a junior at Stanford and was a two-time International Junior President's Cup team member. And you see all the great accolades that he has received over the years, actually earned. He didn't receive those. And he now joins us now live from Stanford wearing the colors of the Cardinal. It's good to see you, Carl. Thanks a lot for joining us. Hey, Carl, going to play in this prestigious amateur event for the second time, does that give you a benefit, the experience of going through it before?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I definitely think playing in one before, I played in 2019 when it was in China. I hadn't really been able to represent the team before. That was prior to coming to Stanford. And I think being around an environment with the fellow Australians trying to compete and win the tournament individually throughout the week, definitely gives a little bit of an advantage. Working with Dino, trying to figure out the course and everything beforehand, all that preparation leading into the event definitely gives previous players an upper hand.
Carl, you obviously play a lot of competitive golf, a lot of different amateur tournaments, but when you see what's at stake in terms of what the winner gets at the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, do you allow yourself to dream of what that could actually mean for you next April?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been on the mind lately. That's the tournament I'm really preparing for. And just knowing that I have exemptions in the Masters and the Open offered in front of me, it's pretty surreal. It's obviously something you dream of. And it's really a blessing to be able to have an opportunity like this to play in an event offering an exemption into those tournaments. It really gets the juices flowing months beforehand. You know, I'm ready to go. And that's all I'm really playing for over there is the win and those spots.
Yeah, and it's a huge television opportunity. It's an international market. You're going to be seen, obviously, back here in the States as well. This event is going to be covered nationally and internationally, as I mentioned. That being said, there is this great opportunity, but you have to control your game and stay in the moment. So what do you feel like you have to be committed to in this championship to have success?
I think I have to be committed to my process and my plan heading into the event. I've got a plan structured out for how I'm going to play the course. I have a plan for the practice in preparation for the course, and just try to not get too off track with, you know, hey, I've got Masters exemption on the line. Like, let's, you know, make a few bogeys. Let's try to get a little more aggressive. You know, it's trusting that process and the plan that I put in place and then executing it as well as I can, and kind of accepting the result that happens and try my best to control my emotions from within.
You've lived and competed in the United States for quite a while now, Carl, but do you still feel comfortable in the international environments? Because you've been a gold medalist at the Youth Olympics in Buenos Aires. You've played the International President's Cup team. Are you comfortable going out of your geographic comfort zone to a place like Thailand to compete?
Yeah, I really enjoy traveling the world and seeing what it has to offer. So, you know, the golf has its fun while I'm over there, but I also enjoy the beauty of traveling to these places. And I think that allows me to be more comfortable with the transition, playing in other international countries like China, Thailand, and Argentina. And yeah, I just really enjoy the culture, and I think it makes it a lot easier.
Mm. Well, Carl, we hope you don't think about pimento cheese sandwiches and visiting the crow's nest, and stay in the process, live in the moment, and enjoy, regardless of how you finish your time in Thailand. Wish you the best in that event.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Well, the most stacked field of the fall is headed to Ridgeland, South Carolina this week. 15 of the world's top 20 are at the CJ Cup, including the defending champion Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Xander Schauffele. Pretty stout field. We'll have more on the unique venue, Congaree Golf Club, coming up next.
Time now for Winning Moments, presented by Win Grips. Let's flash back to last October. Rory McIlroy shot a final round 66 to win the CJ Cup, his 20th career PGA Tour event. Now, this event was played in Las Vegas last season, if you remember, at the Summit Club. Now it's in South Carolina. Yes, the CJ Cup is returning, and it is moving to Congaree Club in Ridgeland, South Carolina. It's a Tom Fazio layout. Hosted the 2021 Palmetto Championship at Congaree, and Gary Hego won that event. So you see some of the notable names in the field, including, like you mentioned, six of the top 10 in the world. Rory McIlroy is back to defend. John Rahm will be there. World number one, Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas as well. So we have a very, well, probably, well, obviously the best event that we're going to have on the PGA Tour so far in this young season happening in South Carolina. So what is the most intriguing storyline heading into the CJ Cup at Congaree?
To me, it's like a lot of the storylines we had last season as well. It's one that's outside the ropes rather than inside the ropes, because we're getting close to the point where Jay Monahan had said there would be a 45 to 60 day window where he was going to put some meat on the bones of this new vision of the tour going forward. We're getting close to the point where that's going to happen. And I expect something to happen this week in terms of what's communicated to players, simply because he's not going to see a field of this quality again for the rest of the year. These are the guys that he wants and has on board for the PGA Tour. These are the guys who want the details. And there are already some rumblings coming from some players that they want to hear an update now. They're getting impatient, waiting to know what's happening for 23 and 24, even though the broad strokes have been laid out. They want the detail. This is a week where I would expect some of that detail is going to emerge for those guys.
Yeah, they will. Specifically, the elevated events. There's still some elevated events to be named on the PGA Tour schedule, and Congaree not too far from Ponte Vedra, 2 or 3 hour car ride. So don't be surprised if Jay Monahan is there to talk to the guys. I think one of the most intriguing storylines is going to be the fact that Rory McIlroy has an opportunity to take over the world's number one ranking position he hasn't held since July of 2020. Now, Rory has obviously been playing well, FedEx Cup champion, and here he has a chance to not only back up the words, which he has been a leader on the PGA Tour, but back it up with his clubs as well. And if Rory McIlroy can go and win on this golf course, which, by the way, we're going to talk about this in more detail, feels much like a Scottish or Australian golf course, then he will ascend to number one in the world again. And I'm, you know, and the PGA Tour would obviously be excited about that. I don't know if Scottie Scheffler would be, but Scottie hasn't been playing well as of late, at least not as well as he has at the beginning of the year. So that's a real possibility of happening.
Which strikes me as somewhat remarkable given how many distractions Rory McIlroy has had over the last year. Some of them self-imposed in the sense of taking on this leadership role in terms of being an advocate for the PGA Tour in this dispute with LIV Golf. But it's very easy to use that as an excuse not to deliver on the golf course. And in the majors, Rory McIlroy didn't. He would count that as a disappointing year in the majors. But he has been a winner twice on the PGA Tour last season. And he's, or three times actually, on the PGA Tour last season, he was a winner. So what he's actually accomplished in terms of the quality of golf he's delivered to put himself in the position of being number one, to me, is fairly remarkable given how much else is going on in his life.
You may say it's a distraction. I think it's motivation. I think that he is so behind and focused on trying to enhance the PGA Tour, trying to make sure that it is the best quality product out there, that he wants to go out there and prove it himself. I think that, you know, I've had a conversation with Rory in the fact that he essentially wants to he understands his role. He is a star. There's no doubt about it. And he says that with humility, but with confidence. And he wants to make sure that his game is backing up his words. And I you're right. I mean, he literally could go down two paths, you know, trying to do things behind the scenes and off the course that would affect his golf game. But it's not that way. I mean, he is really playing well right now.
Which would be interesting if we do get to a point where things tend to stabilize a little bit, if that moves into next year where there's a little less tension around this issue than there has been this year, then the fuel will go away. But I suspect that the motivation or the need to prove himself and to represent the best of himself, which is ultimately Rory McIlroy's greatest motivator of all, won't go anywhere. It is pressure he doesn't need. It's a distraction for a lot of golfers that they keep getting asked about it and they don't want to hear it anymore. Right now, he's the one who seems to deliver in those circumstances better than anyone else.
Live Golf Invitational Series in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia over the weekend. In the final individual event of the inaugural season, Brooks Koepka edged out Peter Uihlein in a three-hole playoff for his first series victory. And after the win, Brooks was taken aback.
You're a tough competitor, but you're a little emotional right now.
Yeah. I didn't know if my career was over for a half second. So to be able to, I told Claude I wasn't sure whether I was going to play. So it's nice to be able to come back and be able to win.
Koepka went on to expand about his health and his career. He said, quote, it's been before LIV when I blew my knee out and my foot was pointed that way, almost backwards and sideways. Credit to Dr. Elatrash, throw his name out there. Eventually I'm going to have knee replacement in a few years, but I didn't know what was. I wasn't sure whether I could even move the same way. And if I want to play, if I could move the way I wanted, I'm fortunate being in that spot right now that I'm in. All right, so Koepka does finally cross the threshold and win on that circuit. You know, people were thinking or expecting big things from him as he joined LIV, but he was a little more honest, it seems like, in talking about his health. What did you take away from Brooks?
That comment about his health, in addition to what he said in the past, it does give you context for why I believe Brooks Koepka is in LIV. Because the injuries are chronic to the point of being debilitating. He's had the right knee surgery. There's an ongoing issue with his left hip as well. If you're Brooks Koepka in that position where he was this summer, you haven't won in a couple of years out there on the PGA Tour. You're struggling physically. You're facing surgery, which may be even more imminent than the few years time frame that he put on it in that quote. Then suddenly if somebody's offering you nine figures to essentially cash out in terms of elite professional golf, then it seems like a pretty good offer if you're Brooks Koepka, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, in the fact that hearing what you're saying, and I agree with you, he has talked to me prior to going to LIV about his body. He said his knee will never be the same. He's had some other issues as well. If indeed he did sell out, as you say, he cashed out maybe, not sell out, what should we expect from Brooks Koepka moving forward? Because he did win. I mean, there were some good players in that field. Should we think that Brooks Koepka, even with the body that's still beaten up, can compete in major championships, can win a major? Do you think that's a real possibility?
Absolutely, because nothing has ever motivated Brooks Koepka more than the idea of playing majors and proving somebody wrong. And so, yeah, I think he could be a contender in that frame. The wins within LIV are a trickier proposition because they're clearly quality players that he beat. But at what point does it become more difficult to measure the quality of the field he's up against? If they're not playing against the best players in the world week in, week out, then how accurately can we actually measure them as being among the best players in the world? It's a closed ecosystem in.
And you bring up another point that we talked about earlier. Because of that, and this is an interesting conversation that I've had, I'm sure you've had as well, then we get to that belief category again. Because you are in that ecosystem, as you talked about, with 47 other players. Their players aren't moving in and out. You're not playing against the best. So when you do come together, i.e. a major championship, as we have seen this year, where is that belief if you're a LIV golfer compared to a PGA Tour player?
Well, that's what they're going to test, presumably, when Brooks Koepka shows up at Augusta with other guys or in major championships.
Well, will he have more? Will he have the same belief, I guess, is my question.
I guess it depends on where you take confidence. A win anywhere is going to give a golfer confidence. But again, you can't quite measure it in the broader world because he's not going up against a Rory McIlroy, a John Rahm, a Scottie Scheffler all the time. It's ultimately a field that is determined by the whims of Greg Norman and the checkbook of MBS. Mm-hmm. There's no qualification process into the LIV Tour, so you're not being measured week in, week out against the best golfers in the world. And that's where it becomes tricky to see how it translates. It might give him confidence, but what is the standard he's playing at on the courses he's playing at easily portable as it would have been otherwise to the PGA Tour? It might be with a guy like Koepka who's got enough belief in himself and enough of a chip on his shoulder to always be that kind of competitor. That might not work as easily for other guys, though.
We shall see when we turn the calendar and if how many LIV players are going to play in major championships.
Well, from one fragile LIV player to another, Sergio Garcia's Ryder Cup career looks like it could be over, and by his own choice. Coming up next, one of Europe's leading golf writers will be here to dig in on the latest happenings from the old world. Stay with us. We're back in golf today. It's time now for the DP World Tour update. And on Sunday, Spain's Adrian Otegi shot a 3-under par 68 in the final round of the Andalusia Masters to win his home event by 6 strokes. Otegi is a LIV golfer and becomes the first player from the Saudi-backed league to win a DP World Tour event. And here is the leaderboard from the Andalusia Masters, a striking 6-stroke victory over Joaquin Lagergren. Minwoo Lee, you see there, finished third after a final round of 70. And some hope for Luke Donald as a Ryder Cup captain there. Rasmus Højgaard, one of the great hopes of European golf, finished top five.
Now, Sergio Garcia normally plays in Spain on the DP World Tour, but he did not over the weekend. Garcia seems poised to forfeit his DP World Tour membership. He's played just 3 European events this season, Dubai Desert Classic, the BMW International, and the BMW PGA. The minimum to maintain membership is 4 events, including 3 Rolex Series events, along with a tournament in his home country, which Garcia has not played. Losing his European membership, or his DP World Tour membership, I should say, would mean Garcia would not be eligible for next year's Ryder Cup. Now, this is what Sergio had to say recently to Sports Illustrated, saying, "I've always said I love the Ryder Cup too much. I obviously would love to keep being a part of it. When I see that so many people are against me, if the team is better without me, I'd rather be out of it. There's obviously several guys who feel strongly that way. The tour is on that same thought. So I don't want to be something that might hurt the team. I love the Ryder Cup too much. Obviously, it's sad for me how much I love the Ryder Cup and everything I've been able to do with Europe there. That's the way they want it. I'm just helping out." And with that, we welcome in Ewan Murray of The Guardian, who joins us now from his home, a great writer and covers European golf and golf globally as well. Ewan, good to see you, my man. What are you taking away from what Sergio said to Sports Illustrated after what it seems to be forfeiting his DP World Tour membership?
Firstly, great to join you guys as well. The first thing I took was that Sergio's playing the victim to a large extent here. His words and you know what he said there is as if he has been badly treated. He has been put upon, poor me. And I think that's a little bit over the top. I think it's a little bit out of line with what's actually happened. But I think the important thing to reflect on here is you mentioned the tournament, the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Now, that was a week, if you remember, in the UK, the Queen died that week. The tournament was disrupted and the whole country's narrative obviously switched well away from golf. But a couple of important things happened that week. Firstly, Keith Pelley, the chief executive of the European Tour Group, addressed players on the Tuesday night. And for the first time in that meeting, he debunked and spoke out against Sergio's previous claim that the tour could become the fifth tour in the world. Keith Pelley had never spoken out against that to anyone, but he ridiculed it really in front of the players. Now, that was one thing, but Keith Pelley then on the Wednesday came and sat in front of the British golf media and repeated those comments and publicly kind of gave Sergio Garcia a dressing down for the fifth tour comment that he'd made. Now, The fact that Keith Pelley did that publicly surprised LIV golfers. I know that because one of them came to me immediately and asked, how do you know what was said at this meeting on Tuesday night? Well, I knew because Keith Pelley repeated it in a media conference. So this was a public laceration of what Sergio had said. And if you fast forward a day, Sergio plays one round in the BMW at Wentworth. Obviously, Friday, there was no golf because of the death of the Queen. But Sergio, after one round, flew back to the United States, was pictured at the college football, I think I'm right in saying, at the weekend. And at that point, it struck me that the chain of events was such that the relationship between Sergio and his home tour was beyond repair. And at that point, I thought it was inconceivable he would feature in the Ryder Cup.
Ewan, it wasn't necessarily even just the withdrawal at Wentworth with Sergio. He was reported as having made some fairly strident comments towards his fellow European Tour players in a locker room in Germany earlier this summer as well. And then we've heard players like Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, guys like that, talk about the desire not to have LIV golfers on the Ryder Cup team. Do you think there's been a hardening of sentiment among players against Sergio just because of this, I guess, the petulance that seems to follow him everywhere?
Yeah, that you're talking about the Porsche European Open in Germany in June. That's also a great point. I mean, that what he said in that locker room really upset and affronted a lot of rank and file DP World Tour members. That was petulant, as you said. And you know, I can't get away from the fact I think this is all quite sad. You and I have seen Sergio and Rory play practice rounds at normal tournaments. I've seen Sergio at close quarters around the Ryder Cup scene, and he's been such a huge part of that for so many years. And you know, I can't get away from the fact it's sad that it's come to this, but I do chuckle, as I'm sure you will, Eamon, at this portrayal by Sergio himself that he has been mistreated and he's been forced out of something, because from what I can see from his own behaviour, a lot of this is very much of his own volition.
I mean, there's no doubt there was respect for him as a player, but considering what has happened surrounding Sergio Garcia, especially, well, throughout his career, but especially over the last 6 months or so, what do you think his legacy will be for European fans?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. He hasn't been around enough. You know, that one round at Wentworth wasn't enough to assess what people truly think. And you know, we can't get away from the fact that I think it was unlikely he would be a playing part of the Ryder Cup again, possibly this next one, but his form over recent times doesn't suggest he would play. So what we have lost, like quite a few of these guys, like Lee Westwood, like Ian Poulter, in a European sense, we've lost vice-captains and captains and people around and involved in the Ryder Cup scene rather than key players anymore. Actually, I think that's a fundamental difference to your side, to the United States, because I think Johnson, Koepka, DeChambeau, they are big, you know, and would be integral playing parts of the Ryder Cup for the foreseeable future. I don't think that applies to the European guys, including Sergio. In terms of his reputation, you know, European golf fans aren't really known for caustic or nasty comment towards golfers, but I do sense that there's disappointment. And like I just tried to articulate there, I think there's a bit of sadness, you know, towards Sergio that it's come to this. I mean, even the DP World Tour currently is in the middle of a three-week run in Spain. John Rahm played and won last week, and we'll come on to the weekend, I'm sure. But, you know, as these events are going on in Spain, you know, Spanish golf is so important to Sergio, we think and assume. He's playing in Bangkok and he's playing in Saudi Arabia for massive amounts of guaranteed live money. And that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, and I think rightly so.
Well, a couple of the guys you mentioned who are also in Jeddah engaging in some social media sniping, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, they got into a spat over the weekend with Eddie Pepperell, who's also been a fairly vocal loyalist for the DP World Tour at this point. Do you sense that the animosity that exists between the tour loyalists and the LIV guys is breaking out into the open more and it's getting a little testier?
Eamon, as you know, I'm well attuned to social media sniping because of my own comments, so I tend to keep out of ones that don't directly involve me, so I kept well out of this. But I watched this with interest at the weekend. Listen, part of me actually admires Westwood and Poulter, especially for trying so hard to defend themselves. I disagree completely with their point of view. But if they want to fight their corner, part of me thinks, fair enough. Eddie Pepperell has, as you said, become increasingly vocal against what the LIV guys have done, in the sense of trying to you know, come back and have their cake and eat it in a European sense. That's what grates with a lot of players such as Eddie. Part of me also wonders, Eamon, I don't know what you think, but part of me wonders if this is perhaps deliberate, because there's now tribalism in golf as there hasn't been before. And I do wonder if this is partly manufactured to create noise and create people taking sides. But, you know, as I say, I do chuckle at people saying how distasteful it is. I think from a media point of view, it's very good fun to watch.
Ewan, the great golf correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer. Hey, I appreciate your insight as always. Enjoy your evening there in the UK.
Hope to see you guys soon.
All right, so let's concentrate on Sergio Garcia and the fact that, you know, he has, you heard what Ewan said, he's playing the victim card. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, Sergio, he's trying to pretend that he is making some altruistic gesture of taking himself out of a Ryder Cup team that he wasn't going to qualify for anyway, and on which he's not welcomed by anyone who isn't named John Rahm. And he's pretending that he's just doing this for the good of the team. And I think Ewan just made the point that really matters. There's a lot of noise about this Ryder Cup and how Liv has impacted it, but the only thing Europe has fundamentally lost is a generation in the back room, in the team room, the potential captains and vice captains. It's a potential more of a player issue on the American side. It doesn't matter so much because the American bench is so deep that the guys like Koepka and Johnson and DeChambeau in many respects are more easily replaced than we once might have thought that would be. But sure, I mean, Sergio's going to Sergio. It doesn't really matter what the subject is. You're going to get the same thing all the time.
Let me say this. I think Sergio Garcia has done a lot in the game. He's done a lot for Spanish golf. He's done a lot for the DP World Tour / European Tour. And he's obviously done a lot for the Ryder Cup. But the quotes to Sports Illustrated that I read to you, he said this twice. I love the Ryder Cup too much. Too much. Obviously not enough to say, hey, I'm going to take the risk of not being a part of the Ryder Cup by going to LIV Golf. It's not the case for him there. He wanted to join this. And partly, I don't blame him completely. I think he was sold by the recruiters of LIV Golf, and he was sold by Greg Norman that you can come play on our tour, still play on the DP World Tour, still play on the PGA Tour, still qualify for the Ryder Cup. And he believed them. It's a tough spot. I mean, I respect what Sergio has done on the golf course. I think he's been, and he's elevated the game in Europe and in Spain and in the PGA Tour quite a bit. People watch him because he is a bit of a needle mover. But it is sad. It is sad that this is where we are right now with him.
And it's very true that he may have been told by the LIV recruiters, you know, that we've seen the text that Greg Norman sent Sergio saying the PGA Tour can't suspend you for one day, much less for a lifetime. That wasn't true. So if Greg told him that the Ryder Cup is similar, and he may well actually have access to DP World Tour events in the future. They don't have the kind of hammer that they can drop in terms of disciplinary proceedings on players that the PGA Tour does. That case will be resolved probably next February in terms of LIV guys having access to that tour. Sergio is an honorary member. He can continue to play that tour. He just can't collect Ryder Cup points. So he will have access to that tour. But he would have been advised and was advised by people who know what the consequences were going to be on the Ryder Cup. So as much as Sergio has been motivated by the Ryder Cup over the years, the all-time points leader on either side, great Ryder Cup player, he chose the money. It comes down to something that simple. And now he's trying to pretend that in some way he's been unfairly forced out based on a choice that he willingly made.
Yeah, that's a great point.